Welcome to Indie Music Explorer. I'm Dan.
I'm Jack.
And we're the Barton Brothers. We are Denver-based songwriters and performers committed to uncovering the tricks and tactics that independent artists are using to succeed in the new music business.
We sit down with creative people of all types to get their insights, and we'll share our own personal thoughts and experiences along the way.
So enjoy the episode. Welcome back, everybody. We are back at it after our little hiatus, which is the word I'm going to use to make it sound a little more intentional instead of just the fact that life has been wild and the podcast got put on the back burner for a minute. But Jack and I are settled back into Colorado. We've been gigging a ton, reconnecting with all of our people, enjoying the sunshine. But yeah, time to get back on it. There's still so many people we want to meet and connect with on this podcast. And today we have one of those people, Kyle McAvoy. Kyle is a multi-instrumentalist, a songwriter, composer, and producer living in upstate New York. He releases music under his own name and several other monikers. And one of the reasons we were really looking forward to speaking with him is because of the huge success he has had in the streaming world, on Spotify in particular. And you may have heard us talk about this. Jack and I have been putting out contemporary classical solo piano music under the name Lake Isabel. And we've been having some modest success with that, but Kyle has had phenomenal success, including getting picked up by Spotify's Peaceful Piano playlist, which has 5.2 million followers. For a little context, our pop music, the Barton Brothers, got 371 streams over the last month. Lake Isabel has had 51,000 over the last month, and Kyle got 58,000 yesterday. So, clearly, we wanted to hear about his background, how he got into music, and what he's been up to. The main thing I think you'll take away from this, you can tell he has a real mindset of being of service. He currently runs an indie label called Sonderhaus, which is representing some really great artists, and you'll hear him talk about that, about their ultra-transparent and artist-friendly business model. And in addition, towards the end, we'll get into what drove him to take on a day job working with kids with developmental disabilities, despite being able to live off of music full time. And that was a great takeaway for a lot of us who feel that a full-time musician's income is the end-all, be-all goal. Kyle did that, but he found that taking on other work and being of service elsewhere gave his music new life and allowed him the space just to create more freely and not take it all so seriously, which we are definitely guilty of over here. So yeah, that's enough of a setup. Excuse the Skype call audio quality. Enjoy this episode, and we'll be back for more soon.
I moved like 3 years ago up to Woodstock, New York.
Oh, right.
So I went to school like outside Boston, and then went back to Connecticut for a summer. Was just trying to kind of like figure out what I wanted to do and where I wanted to end it up. I came up here to like visit a friend, and then I just kind of just moved up here, and it's been just that way ever since. I don't know, just something up here is like just the vibe. You know, it's like just a really magical place, especially for, you know, just musicians and art of all types, you know?
Yeah, totally. Well, what did you, study music when you were in college?
So I went to school, it was like arts and entertainment management. And that just kind of was like focused on more like running like a venue. And it kind of like made sense because at the time I was actually like a talent buyer at like a couple of different all ages venues in Connecticut. And I was like doing, you know, every time there was like a school break, I'd just tour and was doing a lot of tour managing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I also really liked doing like the nonprofit work. So it was cool. I mean, it was definitely weird because like I was learning pretty much everything I knew outside of school, you know, and then like,
yeah, all the professors, you wanted, like, to read and back it up.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of cool. Like, I ended up starting, like the school I went to didn't really have any music scene or anything. So I ended up just like putting together their first like fall fest. And I ended up teaching like a lot of the classes with my professors. And like, you know, we'd go over like an actual contract that I got signed or, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
It was kind of like a cool way to just like get involved with something. You know, it was like just something like bigger than a usual, just like going to college and get your degree, and then just kind of like, you know, I was doing all this stuff like outside of school. So
that was
definitely cool. And it was a crazy time in my life. I was like playing college soccer, and then that's like the only reason I got into college, pretty much. I was like playing soccer, and so I would literally just, I was playing in all these different bands at the time and everything. So I would like go and play a soccer game, and then have to drive to another state and play a festival, and you know, like,
wow, man. People who are not familiar with your work, just give us like a little basic elevator pitch of the kind of stuff that you're up to and a little bit of your story.
So I guess that's kind of when it all started. When I was like a sophomore or freshman or sophomore in college, I put out an EP. Like I said, at the time I was playing in a couple different, like, you know, indie rock bands and filling in guitar for a bunch of different bands. And I put out an EP that was just like five solo piano, like, just like improvs that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And that ended up getting on a couple different, like, some songs got on these like Spotify playlists at the time, that were like, it's called like Deep Focus and Stress Relief.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of like my intro to everything. Like, that kind of happened just randomly, and I wasn't sure what to expect at the time. Like, Spotify was still like, you know, it was a lot smaller in like 2013 or whatever, and a lot of artists, like, you know, like the big, like Taylor Swift and Radiohead and stuff, they all like were refusing to put their music on there, and nobody really knows the future of it.
Yeah.
And then I remember, like, I was just in college, like, just one day I got like a check or whatever from my distributor for like a couple $1,000, and it was like, just like something went off in my brain, like, holy shit, this could be like a, you know, like an actual source of income, and something that in the future could grow and turn into a sustainable way to make, you know, make music and continue to do this. It was kind of like, for a while, I think I really got into it. I didn't really have any like method to it, you know. It was kind of just like putting in stuff out there, seeing if it would catch on some big playlist or something. But besides that, I didn't really get into much like the independent playlisting and everything.
Yeah.
And then I think after a couple of years went by, I kind of started going back into it, especially after I finished school and my solo music was doing well. So that's kind of, I had so many artists just coming to me for help with like playlisting and marketing and just how to like make a living off their music, that I started this little studio and run a label, and we just tried to make it as like artist friendly as we possibly could. So that's how Sondra House came to be in the last, I don't even think it's
that's
been
awesome,
like a full year since we started it. So
that's really exciting. Well, tell people about Sondra House.
At the time, I was, you know, like, I self-released for a while, and then I worked with some, like, different labels, and I think with, like, any time I worked with a different label, there was always obviously something new that they would bring to the table, or, like, something I would learn.
Yeah.
And it's not really that I didn't like working with other labels or anything, but I think my big thing, like, as an artist, I like to just kind of like be in the loop with everything. And I really like the idea of just like being super transparent about who you're working with and like what's going on behind the scenes. So I manage this mastering engineer, Alex Saltz, who's like this incredible mastering engineer. I met him through a band called The Shivers that I manage. And he mastered like Vampire Weekends for CP, Fear Tick. He's done a bunch of big like compilations for a label that had like David Bowie and Bruce Springsteen on it. So he's, you know, he's got the credits and everything. He's like an incredible engineer, but he just wasn't doing, like, in terms of just like getting new clients, you know, all his clients were kind of like return clientele, and his business model was just kind of set up like how it's been for the past 30 years that he's been mastering, you know? So we kind of had this idea of like between him and then my buddy Matt, who's like a really incredible graphic designer, and he's also a musician under the name Realizer. So we kind of decided that like we wanted to come up with a label. We wanted to take like the least percentage that we possibly could. So what we do is a band will send us like a final EP, preferably like either solo acoustic guitar, solo piano, or kind of like a shorter soundscapey ambient song.
Right.
Alex will master it. Matt does the graphic design and like all the promo materials. And then I do all the playlisting and marketing once it comes out, and we each only take 5%. And then the artist keeps, you know, so the artist gets 85% of all sound recordings. They keep 100% of their publishing and composition.
Yeah.
And then we use a distributor called Stem. So they pay out the artist directly each month. The artists have like, you know, they could see in-depth stats and analytics about how the song is performing, where the income is coming from. And that was kind of just like how we started, you know, and like, I guess the one thing we tell a lot of artists is like, even for us to make like a couple hundred dollars off a release, you know, it has to get at least like 1 million plays.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even like 1 million plays on Spotify is only equal to like $4,000.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like our incentive, you know what I mean? Is like, right. Luckily, you know, like Alex has a lot of like his, you know, his main thing is just like he'll get offered to master like a full length album and get a good price that keeps, you know, he's just been doing that for, like I said, like over 25 years. And then addition to it, you know, me and Matt are also releasing music. So right. It's not like for us, this label is like our huge income and like live and die by money. So it kind of is like we're able to only take that percentage, and just like it gives us enough just to be able to like, yeah, do what we're doing, focus on our own stuff, and at the same time be able to like help new artists and break new artists and kind of get them where they want to be, help them make a living off what they're doing. And like, we could at least make enough money to just run this label and print merchandise and host a website and do, you know, everything that we have to do. So yeah. And it also kind of plays into like having the actual physical location, like any artist that's in the US around the area, you know, like part of the deal is that they could come and use the studio for free whenever. So and it's like, you know, a little nice little cabin up in the woods up in the Hudson Valley. So yeah, a lot of artists just like to come up, and even if they just hang out for a week and write new stuff, or they want to, you know, demo a full-length album and then go record it, you know, it's not always like the end goal. It's definitely more of like just a smaller kind of retreat recording place, but we're definitely kind of working on expanding that in the future. And we'd like to do like a bigger kind of, you know, move to a bigger space and do artist residencies and all that stuff.
What a dream, though.
Yeah, that's pretty ideal.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. You know, it was kind of like the last thing that I haven't done in the music world. Like, I've been a booking agent and done PR and, you know, did the tour managing stuff for years.
Yeah.
And like, I never was huge into recording myself. You know, I always just kind of did like simple, just direct in, like in the box, simple interface stuff.
Yeah.
So having, you know, the idea of like, I just had all this crazy vintage gear and cool stuff that I've been collecting, and I was like, you know, I should just find a space and try to make this into something. So yeah, definitely having a physical location helped.
Have you always been into kind of ambient music, or did that mostly come about from the success that you had when you released those songs?
That was like, it's funny because I was always in different worlds, you know, like, my main band, like growing up, I was in a band called The Guru for a while that just like would tour across the US and support, you know, like bigger indie bands when they would come over to the Northeast. And, then from there, it was kind of just like working with all types of singer songwriters. And then I think, yeah, right around the time I was getting into like Oliver Arnold, in college and everything, that's what kind of made me, I was like, shit, I should just go. And like, I went to a college that was a lot of dance majors. So in each dance studio, there'd be like a big grand piano or something. So I still like don't know how to read music or really play any instruments like proficiently. So that's like everything I've recorded to date is improv. So that's kind of part of my thing, is I just will sit down and I'll bust out like 10 tracks at a time, and then I'll put a couple under my name, and then I have a bunch of different side projects and monikers, and you know what I mean? It's kind of just one of those things where I just try to just make it, you know, just like don't put too much thought into it. And yeah.
That's really cool. And you know, and interesting to watch, because Jack and I are also like primarily pop musicians, but we have a background as, you know, like, you know, we grew up playing classical piano, and just kind of on a whim, similarly, about a year ago, started just putting out, you know, kind of relaxing piano music, and, you know, a tiny bit of like indie playlist success. And it's such like a small supportive community. And you're one of the people that we first noticed, like, especially in this last year, just like things seem to have really picked up, which is why we're interested in talking.
It's been weird. I mean, like I said, when I first started, it was like getting on these big editorial playlists at the time, where there was still kind of this, like, you know, you couldn't submit directly to Spotify. There was this whole mystery behind it. And then for a couple of years, I just didn't really focus on it, because I was so busy doing the touring and just like living this crazy life, you know, that was like way fun, but it wasn't really like sustainable, you know? And then, I think just also in the past year, that's when I really kind of got back into it, because it just kind of seemed like, the playing field for artists was just like different now, you know, like it was really, everything just seemed more transparent, and just like, like Spotify, I really do think that they just want to help artists make a living, you know? And I think a lot of people, I mean, it's just kind of like one of those things. I'm always having that discussion with people, especially where I live. It's a lot of like older guys that built these huge studios and got like the big major label money back in the day. And you know what I mean? Like,
who hates
when I kind of talk about, And I try to tell them, you know, it's like at this point, it is really hard to make a living doing it. You know, like I moved here years ago and was able just to just do that, you know, like live off Spotify money. And, but given that, I mean, I have, like I said, like 10 different names I release music under. I'm constantly putting out stuff, all my solo stuff as well. I'm doing like collabs and set, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like it's like, I'm just hanging out and chilling, you know? So I think at this point, it's like you really need to know and understand the algorithms and kind of how things work, and have like a pretty crazy work ethic if you want to be able to do it. But I think it's also getting easier just to make it a part as, you know, just like one of your big things of passive income as a musician, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So with when you're sharing your solo piano music and stuff of that nature, have you kind of figured out a tactic in terms of who to submit to and when to submit it? Or at this point, you know, have your streams been so big that essentially, you know, everything you release kind of automatically gets picked up by the algorithms? Or is there still like a technique that you use for every song?
So I think like, even probably in the last year, that's when I really got into the independent playlisting. And it was just really, you know, like reaching out to people that had user playlists. And then, as you know, there's like the labels, like, you know, Piano and Coffee and Double J and 1631 that, you know, I've all like worked with and still work with, and they have their playlists. And just kind of like reaching out to them. I mean, a big thing is when you're reaching out to like users and just random people on Spotify that make playlists, is like explaining to them what you do. You know what I mean? Like, so I would reach out to somebody and explain, you know, I have this label, or I work with artists. And, you know, sometimes you get someone that's like, you know, just pay me like however much money, you know? And then I would kind of say like, you know, I can't offer you any money to do what I'm doing, and this is why. And you kind of explain to them, like, if you put us on your playlist and we get an additional 1,000, 2,000 plays a month, like that's only like $8, you know? And like, if it's a Sonderhaus release and I'm getting 5%, that's not even like $1 a month, you know? So, but then you kind of just say like, you know, this really helps independent musicians, and like maybe your playlist isn't going to make them like thousands of dollars, but them getting that additional like streaming and people listening and saving it, that helps them, you know, all that independent playlisting plays into getting you on editorials and getting your music out there. So yeah, that's, I mean, that's kind of what I do now, is I have like a group of curators that it's like, yeah, they're not asking for anything in return. Like sometimes they want us to like promote their playlist or post about it.
Of course.
So besides that, you know, a release comes out and we send it around to them, and if they add it, they do. And if they don't, you know, that's kind of what it is. But at least that way, it's like, you're not just getting a huge editorial ad and then being taken off, or, you know, like some artists I've seen lately, it's like, anytime you talk to artists, that's the first thing. It's like, oh, what can you do with playlisting? You know, and like, how can we guarantee a big placement? And I've seen like whole artists put out incredible full lengths on big labels, and then it just flops and doesn't land any editorials. And then there's nothing besides that. So they're just under contract, under an exclusive release, and that's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So at least our way,
it's like, playlists are an interesting way to like kind of have like this base of like a churn that you can count on, and you know, the editorials can be a huge boost, but then you're taken off and left with nothing. So
yeah, well, and that's the thing, it's like any artist, for us, we try to just make it so it's like, I think the biggest like lesson, or probably one of the only things I took away from college was I had this business teacher, and like he just kind of talked a lot about like kind of under promising and over delivering.
Yeah,
you know, just really the idea of like, you know, if you tell someone you're gonna have something done in 2 weeks, get it to them in a week, you know what I mean? Or like just in the way we run our label, like we try to just take as least as possible and make it artist friendly, like the artists could cancel at any time. They own all their own publishing. They're not locked into anything.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, like when their release comes out, we're going to push it like it's like a huge major label release, you know, and get it out as many playlists and as many different people just to hear it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's like,
yeah,
every artist that's worked with us has come back, you know, just because it's like, there's not really any negatives, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's definitely some releases that just land like bigger stuff and different curators like it, but it's like, we've never put out a release that's just completely like flopped or hasn't provided the artist any new fans or listeners, or, you know what I mean?
That's awesome.
Yeah. And you build up a lot of goodwill that way, which like, you know, who knows how that comes back, but you know it does. So like when you underpromise and deliver, just like building up like the goodwill of the artist community is like invaluable.
Well, and I think that's the biggest thing is we've noticed with like that compilation that we did, Recollections, that was like so much bigger than any release we've done, just given the fact that it was like it literally brought 18 artists from around the world together, you know, like, and we all were on the email chain, we all put it out, and like I think just the power of each one of those artists, like just posting about it and kind of like connecting with each other and following each other and adding, like they all have their own playlist. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So that itself was kind of like when we realized that, you know, it was just so much more than working directly one-on-one with artists and like doing these one-off releases, but the compilation really like started just making this huge community, you know? And that's, I think a lot of, at the time, that's when like some other labels in the music world like reached out to me, and they really were like, you know, like a label like Double J or like Sergio from Piano and Coffee, you know, they put out like different styles, you know, and like the way they go about releases is different. But I think that's when we started working together as like, you know, I would kind of act as like a streaming manager, just working directly with the artists, just with like simple stuff, you know, like, I mean, so many simple things make a huge difference. Like even just like like a lot of artists I would see would put their stuff out and like didn't have a simple bio, or like didn't have their profiles on Apple Music and Deezer like verified with photos, and like didn't have their stuff registered with Sound Exchange or ASCAP. You know what I mean? Like stuff like that a lot of artists, I think it's easy to just get lost in the digital world and not really know like what to do when a release comes out. But I mean, really, it's like you could be doing something productive every day to get your release out there. And there's a lot of different income streams that I think some artists just never even get into because they don't know it exists or they don't know how to do it themselves. So that's kind of where I come in. It's just like, yeah, really working directly with artists just to give them whatever they need or teach them, just about like, yeah, the music world and how it's evolving super quickly.
How many artists do you have on Sonderhaus right now?
We have like over like 50 or something.
Wow.
At this point, I've kind of just like lost track because it's really, you know, like we have, there's some artists that I'm like managing full time and really just, you know, like their stuff has come out and it's really just taken off and they're getting a lot of different offers in terms of like playing live or licensing. And so I've kind of worked with some artists more directly, but yeah, I mean, at this point it's like every day, it's like, I just am getting emails from around the world, just different people that want to be involved. And it's not, you know, like there's some stuff that like, I try to just be like super straightforward, you know, like if someone sends me something and it's done on like a VST that doesn't really sound that great or something, I'll be like, hey, do you want me to like send me the MIDI file and I could run this through my thing and I'll help you like mix it. You know, like I think that's such a big part is just being honest with artists and like just offering, you know, like, I don't know, it's not like a huge deal to do that, you know, but I think there's some labels that just right off the bat would be like, oh, sorry, we're not taking submissions. Or, you know what I mean? I don't really believe in that type of way of doing business. You know,
Have you noticed that from some people that we've talked to that for the solo piano stuff, there is a bit of a difference between people who record MIDI and people who record on real pianos. Have you noticed a difference in terms of success or like people just – it's being really noticeable that it's not a great MIDI quality, or what have you noticed in that sense?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I try for like my own project, I try to do everything on just like a real upright felted piano. For a lot of my side projects, I'll use Keyscapes. That's like my favorite VST. I think like Spectronics makes it. And it's a little like pricey, but between them and then like all the Spitfire Labs, like, they make some cool felted piano sounds for cheap.
Yeah.
I always tend to go for the real stuff. Cause I love like, you know, just like the little creaks and the fingernails on the keys and just like that type of stuff that really, you know, separates it. But you know, I think like, yeah, with VSTs now, I mean, I have like, even like that guy, Chris Bartels, the one behind Elskoan and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's one of those people that could just use like, just do everything in the box and then you'll hear it and it sounds like so real, you know, like he'll take some like, yeah, some of those VSTs, just like the Spitfire stuff, and he'll layer like some kind of Foley sounds in the back and do a couple different like tracks, but it sounds like it's just a solo piano with like some little Foley tracks behind it. So I've definitely heard it be done like tastefully, you know, and sound, yeah, you know, just as good as the real thing. But yeah, I guess it really all depends like the playing style and yeah, just kind of like what VST they're using and all that.
Did it take you a long time to figure out how to record an upright piano? Because it seems like somewhat of a complicated process.
Yeah, I my background is pretty much everything but recording. So yeah. I was really like, you know, like, I've recorded at so many different studios, and my buddy Ben Talmy, he runs a studio in New York City, right in Williamsburg, called Greylock Records.
Mm-hmm.
And he just has like just a great understanding of, you know, he's just a great engineer, and he's also into just like contemporary classical music. So almost everything I've recorded has been at his place, and yeah, he's just like, I couldn't tell you exactly the way he records, but I know it's some pretty nice mics in a big room mic, like, you know, mic'd up on an upright that has the practice felt on and everything. But yeah, I've had a lot of artists just be like, how do you get this sound? So if they're anywhere in the area, just send it to him because he's very knowledgeable and his prices are really, you know, just fair, and he's just really cool to work with.
That's really awesome. Hey man, well, like, I know that you have a busy day ahead of you, and we just have a few minutes left. So, I mean, do you have any, it seems like you put a lot of thought into like helping independent artists, and you're really passionate about kind of where the new music industry is headed. Do you have any like words of wisdom for people who are kind of aspiring to do what you do?
Yeah, it's funny. I'm like going, so like I said, I moved up here years ago, just living off my Spotify money. And I think like my whole life, I wanted to just live off my music.
Yeah.
And then after doing that for like 2 years, I kind of just was feeling like, not like underwhelmed by it all, but it was like I really was just waking up every day and trying to force myself to make music. Yeah. And it was like, just felt like I was like just plateauing, you know what I mean? And it really was like struggling to find just creativity and inspiration. So like I was like, you know, more than set with my music money, but I ended up just getting another job that I work with like kids with like developmental disabilities. So like autism and schizophrenia and bipolar and all that in like a community house where they all live. And yeah, man, I mean, it was kind of just one of those things where I felt like I just needed like just something, you know. I spent all my time helping like independent artists and managing artists. And I was like, you know, it's just as crazy, you know what I mean? Like, so I kind of wanted to just do something else with my life. And I've been like doing that for over a year now, working anywhere from like 40 to 60 hours a week on top of all the music stuff.
Wow.
And I guess like, yeah, I don't know. I guess like the lesson is kind of like, I feel like so many artists are just like doing their day jobs and then just like hitting me up, just being like, you know, all I want to do is figure out how to like make a living off this and do that. And like, just kind of from already doing that, you know, like spending the years touring and living off just tour managing and seeing the country, and then also doing it from the other side, just like hanging out and recording and doing that. I think it's like so many artists get caught up with feeling like a professional musician or feeling like they're like, you know what I mean?
Like they're not legit until they don't have to have another job.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, yeah, man, I think that's part of being a musician, like everyone to an extent, like even when I've been on tour buses and like with bands that are playing arenas, I mean, they still want more, you know? So I think it just never stops. And that's kind of part of like being a musician. So it's like the quicker you could kind of realize that, like, yeah, I don't know. I think I've just found a new love for music when it is like not my day job, you know, and working another job that's like not really anything about the money. It's just something that I enjoy. And then being able to take my days off and my time after work to like focus on music and do all that stuff, it's kind of like giving my music a new life. And in a way, it takes the stress away. You know, if I put out a song and it like totally bombs, it's not like it's like, oh man, I can't pay my rent, or you know what I mean? It's like, cool, whatever, it's a track. Like, some people didn't like it, the other stuff is still doing well, you know? So I think that's kind of like the biggest.
You found a way to like be of service, which is, you know, kind of like fills a hole that isn't there when you're like, well, I'm a musician and I think about writing music and I write music about writing music. That just like,
yeah,
can be so self.
Oh yeah.
So you've like found something to channel your energy and get inspiration from.
Exactly. So it's like, yeah, I think between, like I said, like helping musicians and then helping these guys during the day, and just kind of like, yeah, just makes you grateful for everything, you know? So yeah, that's the biggest thing. And who knows how long all this Spotify stuff will last, you know?
Right, so they could change the algorithm definitely tomorrow and you're on your ass.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. So it's like, I've always been planning short and long-term goals and things I want to accomplish. And, you know, now I'm doing like a lot of more, like I've been doing like college lectures and just talking to people about the music industry now. But I mean, I'm like, you know, 24 and pretty into it, and I still feel like I'm falling behind and super overwhelmed. So it's definitely like, that's all you could do. Just try to like keep on top. And biggest thing is just asking, from our, you know, help from other artists and labels, and just kind of like, just doing all that. And hopefully it all just plays out and works out, you know?
Awesome, man. Well, we really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to us, man.
Yeah, of course. No, it was great talking. And man, let me know if you guys need anything else or any other questions.
Absolutely. Well, let people know where they can like find your music and keep up with what you're doing.
I think the biggest thing is just the website, thesonderhouse.com. That's kind of where we're doing all the updated releases, and you could find all my music and all that.
All right, that's awesome. Well, it was a pleasure to connect, man. Hope we can stay in touch, and we look forward to keeping up with what you're doing.
Yeah, same, man. Cool. You guys have a good day.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Cool. Peace out. Bye.
That's it for now. Thanks for listening. If you enjoy what you hear, please consider subscribing, rating, and leaving a review. If you want to learn more about what we're up to, you can go to thebartonbros.com and find us at The Barton Brothers on Instagram and Facebook. We will see you next time.